702
on 92.7 and 106 FM.
Streaming on 702.co.za.
The 702 app.
And on DStv channel 856.
Now maybe we'll have a conversation as to what would you rather not have, electricity or water, eh? It appears that the people at Rahima Musa Mother and Child Hospital and the community around it are not given the option of whether or not they don't have water or electricity. Both are not provided for them. And Dr. Imtiaz Suleiman of Gift of the Givers joins me now. Dr. Suleiman, thank you so much for talking to me once again. I appreciate your time.
Good evening, Colby. Thanks very much.
So, Rahima Musa Mother and Child Hospital, a hospital that has been a landmark and an iconic point in South Africa's health industry, does not have water, and this is where moms go and have babies. Tell me about what's going on there, Dr. Suleiman.
We got a call on Friday from hospital staff and management to say, can you please help? We don't have water in the hospital. We need drinking water. If you can help on portable toilets and any additional support you could give us, we're in serious trouble. At that point, I didn't realize. In fact, I got a call before that, you know, from a media person to say there's a problem in the hospital. I wasn't aware of it. And then subsequent to that, I got a call from the hospital itself on Friday, saying what I just said. And immediately that afternoon, we delivered bottled water. And they said, look, portable toilets we're still looking to. But first, let's see what the problem is. And then they said, look, they thought, and then I had a CEO speak on a radio interview yesterday to say they thought from the authorities that it was a pump failure, which is common when there's load shedding, affects all bowls, affects all pubs throughout the country. And it may be that. But I mean, this is, then came to our information that this is happening from the 19th of May. There hasn't been consecutive load shedding for 14 days, for 24 hours a day, you know, for 14 days. So it's obviously something else. And then it mentioned they think it's something to do with the water infrastructure. She's trying to get hold of the authorities involved with the water. For 3 days, for some MD from some water department, she can't get hold of him or he's not taking her call, kind of thing. And it's obvious. And again, they called yesterday to say they need some more water. And then they said, this can't work. We've got this kind of experience. Bottled water is a very temporary stopgap measure that serves a purpose for a specific set of time. But long term, while this problem is waiting to get sorted out, and even beyond that, something more definite needs to be done. And then I spoke to my drilling teams yesterday. They finished some job somewhere and they're already on site in the hospital. They arrived this afternoon. The drill is set on the point where they're supposed to drill. And tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock it starts. But we're saying that the permanent solution, not only for the Rahima Musa, but all hospitals in the country should have boreholes. Even all schools and clinics should have boreholes, because we've seen that the problems it causes, especially in the Eastern Cape, when so many clinics and hospitals are without water. And you ask the question, what is it better to be, without electricity or without water? You can live without electricity, but you'll die without water.
Absolutely. And this couldn't have come at a more inopportune time with rapidly rising COVID-19 numbers. Here in Gauteng, we are talking about a third wave. Rahima Musa being one of the feeder hospitals for the temporarily shut Charlotte Matleka Hospital. Healthcare workers trying to catch up with non-COVID conditions between second and third wave, and add to that a desperate community in the vicinity of the hospital. Talk to me about the community, Dr. Suleiman, and how this lack of water has impacted them.
Well, the lack of water itself, you know, no hospital can run without water. The basic thing is sanitation, you know, and disinfection, and to wash your hands before you, because you spread infection. The fastest way to spread infection is to have a lack of water. Your surgical procedures, your labor wards, kids with gastroenteritis, you know, pneumonia, all kinds of infection require water to do it for the personnel to be clean, like we take all the precaution for COVID-19. But the other diseases are spread in a similar way, you know, so you need to have that precaution. You need to wash floors. Apparently, the linens cannot be washed, the laundry can't function. The overalls, whatever needs to be washed, the scrubs, all the suits can't be washed. All that is a major problem for infection in hospital. And you can't change. You can't use soap. And you have to get water. It takes a lot of extra time to try to get water from a water tank or from a JoJo tank. Already in South African hospitals, especially the frontline ones or the busy ones, you have a shortage of staff. You have a shortage of staff. You have a shortage of time. You have an increased load of patients. And now to have that additional burden of trying to walk two or three floors down to go and fetch water, it just aggravates the process. So that's a major problem.
And then secondly,
as you mentioned, if the hospital already has enough of patients, which the doctors probably called and said, look, second wave is over. Before the third wave, come do your operations, come get other things sorted out. Let's fix everything quickly before the third wave comes. Then we shut all the wards again and we go back to COVID-19. So they were probably in that phase wanting to do something. They got an obstruction. There's no water. And then add to that, the patient that's supposed to go to Charlotte and the KK, one of the feeder hospitals, is this hospital they got to come to. So you've got an increased volume of patients. And your question about the community. Now the CEO says, and I got a message right now just before you called me, in Coronation Will, there's no water for several days and people don't know what to do. And according to the CEO on the radio, she said people were coming to the hospital to fetch water. The hospital doesn't have water for itself, but she didn't have the heart to turn him away. The water tankers just bring the water. Some water must go to the people who just want to drink water. They're just thirsty. Forget everything else. But now you're creating an additional burden and a risk of additional COVID because you're getting volumes of people coming to a hospital out of desperation, and it can cause queuing, it can cause overcrowding, and it can have super spread events.
You know, the seriousness of this, not only for the patients of that particular hospital, but because, as you've said, that these are potential super spreader event creating, situations. Is there an appreciation from the authorities about what is happening here? Because I suppose it's very easy to say, listen, we're dealing with a Charlotte Matleke situation, and I've heard that patients have had to buy water, in order just to drink, as you said just now. Is there an appreciation of the direness of the situation by the authorities, by the MEC, for example, of health and of infrastructure and development?
I have no idea. I think someone should ask him directly. You know, there's a couple of issues here. One is the systems, the government systems are completely incorrect. You can't be waiting 14 days to put water in a hospital. It's just totally illogical. I mentioned this on several interviews, and the government knows I said it quite plainly and bluntly and frankly.
Yeah.
Government doesn't understand three words: urgency, emergency, and disaster. I think they'll only understand that if somebody happens to their own families that are caught up in the situation. And then we'll probably see the speed coming. You can't say we're sorting something out and we're waiting for somebody else and somebody's going to fill a paper in and then we're going to put a tender. Emergency means apply the emergency rule, which means all rules are waived and you act instantly. Water is life-saving. It's required in the hospital. It's required to help people. And talking about Charlotte Matleke, what is the logic of shutting the hospital down for so long? Did the entire hospital burn? Or the only one section?
Yeah.
Can't other hospital sections function without the one section? Do you have to shut everything down and put more burden on the other hospitals when they're already overloaded? I don't understand the logic in what's going on.
What do you think is going on here, Dr. Suleiman? I mean, this is stuff that beggars belief, that defies all logic. What do you think is going on?
And especially when you're coming, you're looking at a third COVID wave, you need all the hospital facilities. Now we were running a few months ago, let's put up MedSec, let's put up the field hospital here, then everywhere. You've got a hospital in front of you. That's one of the best hospitals in Joburg General initially called. And you're shutting an old hospital down because some fire hit affected one wing of the hospital. That wing may be completely dangerous, I understand. It's a rational move. Don't put people in that wing. But obviously you can block it up, but something temporarily, and say, look, all hospitals, the rest of the hospital we can use. You know, if there's no pharmacy, the pharmacy burned down. Take one of the wards and convert it into a pharmacy. Couldn't be difficult. At least, if not one, it can't be 100% functional, but at least 50% or 60% can't be functional at that level.
We were just talking about a 13 million rand contract and the distribution of certain PPE, or let me say COVID-19 relief that was worth 13 million rand, and 16 million rand was spent to do that. All of this stuff that's happening at the moment, the inexplicable opening up of Charlotte Matleke Hospital, the inexplicable use of the emergency rule in order to provide not only the Rahima Musa Hospital with water, but the community in that vicinity. I ask again, I mean, you've probably been talking to some of the people around there. Why? What's going on? Why does it seem as though the incompetence is deliberate?
You know, one of the frustration of people is they don't know. Nobody gives them answers. What is the problem? The hospital CEO was frustrated with the same thing. For 3 days, she can't get an answer. What is the problem? People need to be honest. You know, if people understand the issue, they'll say, okay, we understand. This is the problem. It will take 10 days to fix up. In the meantime, we'll try to bring some water tanker as much as we can, within our means and within our limitations. This we will try to do. So when there's understanding, there's a degree of acceptance. But when there's no explanation, then there's conjecture, there's no suspicion, there's anger, people don't know what to do, how long. The hospital, must they book patients in my Monday, Friday, 2 weeks' time, a month's time, what must they do? When will the health situation stabilize? They need timelines. You're working with life and death. You're working with people that come from far. They got transport costs. They got families. They got relatives. They need to make arrangements, especially the poorer class of people. It's not easy for them compared to people who have money and can do things at short notice and just go anywhere they want. So you have to consider that people come from a difficult situation. They make all the effort to come, and you demoralize them. Mm-hmm. Because suddenly you say, I can't do anything for you because this water problem is gone, and we don't know how long it's going to take to come back, and we don't know what the problem is. But there has to be clearer communication, getting to the root of the problem, and one word, honesty. You tell a person there's a problem, it's not something in our hands, it's something we're trying to fix, nobody's going to be unreasonable.
Part of the experience for, you know, drilling of boreholes and the provision of water, you as Gift of the Givers got in Makanda, which has been an absolute crisis. Are you seeing similar patterns here in Johannesburg to what you saw in Makanda and the ensuing water crisis there?
Well, it's developing in Johannesburg. You know, to me, it seemed to be only one hospital. But from the feedback, it's more than the hospital. It's an entire region. And it can be sorted out because there's no drought in Joburg. In Makanda, there's drought. There's infrastructure issues. Yes, there are infrastructure issues in Johannesburg. We also hear about that. But Johannesburg is a money province. It is one of the richest capitals on the continent. It's supposed to have a rich municipality and a rich province, and it's supposed to be the heart of business where all the corporates are, unlike Makanda. You know, it's a university town that's dependent on tourists and students and visitors and, I mean, 50 conferences a year to make the money. There's no water. Everything shuts down. There's no alternative means of income in that town. Joburg's got enough. It makes beggars believe that a place like Joburg cannot fix up a hospital in the richest province in the continent. It's just illogical. So if something like that happens to a small town or a rural area, what chance is there for those communities?
You start drilling tomorrow at 7 a.m. At what time do you think the hospital will then have water, in your estimation, Doctor?
It's not as simple as that.
Yeah.
It's not as simple as that. You know, we have to read the right rocks, the right aquifers. We have to see the speed at which the water comes out.
Yeah.
We have to check when it runs, is it 3,000, 5,000, 1,000 liters per hour? Then what we do is how quick does the aquifer recharge after we take the water out? Does it fill at 3,000 or less? Because you can't kill the aquifer. You've got to see how much the water pump must be less than what it refills with. Then you need to do yield testing for 24, 48, 72 hours. Then you need to send the water for testing, whether it's got bacteria, E. coli, parasites, and the type of metals in the water. Is there too much iron? Is there too much sulfur? Is there other items that may cause problems?
Mm.
And then after the test comes in, then the system of connecting to JoJo tanks, putting booster pumps, that needs to use water in the meantime for non-drinking purposes whilst waiting. That we can do within 48 hours if we find adequate water. That we can do in 48 hours. Non-drinking water.
Yes.
And thereafter, if the tests come back, does it require filtration systems or it's pure, it's clean, satisfactory to drink? Then we connect it to all the hospital facilities, and then do we put taps outside the hospital? The community, in the meantime, if they get stuck without water. So there are several factors to consider. But if we get good quality water, that, you know, that comes out within 24 to 48 hours. It can even come in 5 or 6 hours. And it can come fast enough, and it's a good yield, and the ball survives, and it won't get the aquifer won't get affected. We can start pumping immediately into the existing system of the hospital. So you just use gravity, and you go to all the different taps in the different floors, and we can use booster pumps from the ball to push it right to the top.
Dr. Imtiaz Suleiman, thank you very much for joining us, and thank you very, very much for what you and the Gift of the Givers are doing for that particular hospital. I'm talking here about the Rahima Musa Mother and Child Hospital and the community around there. Thank you so much for joining us.